back once again to Everyday Holiness, a Faith Indie podcast. This is your host, Dan Allen, Associate Director of Spirituality and Service here at the Notre Dame Alumni Association. And I'm pleased to be joined this week by Jeremy and Molly Aranda. Jeremy received his MA in Theology in 2005 from Notre Dame, and Molly got an undergraduate degree in 2006, majoring in Anthropology. They're coming to us remotely from St. Louis, but Molly, Jeremy, just want to welcome you to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Dan. It's great to be here.
So, Jeremy, to start with you, can you tell us about your hometown, some of your formative memories of childhood? And then, Molly, I'll ask you the same thing.
All right. Well, I was born actually in an itty-bitty town outside of St. Louis, Missouri. I was called Grace Summit. I was born, actually, my family lived in a trailer park that's out there in Grace Summit. I was in community. So my grandparents lived there. My aunts and uncles lived there. I had cousins in it. And we all grew up there together. That was probably earliest memories were there. I have a Hispanic family, a very large Hispanic family, and they're a blast. A lot of energy, a lot of laughter. What else can I tell you? My family, being Hispanic, there's a lot of hugging and laughing and loudness, which is, I think, very different than Molly grew up, but it's still great. Just different. There was also a lot of faith. I wouldn't say necessarily that there was like a lot of Catholic identity in it, but there was just a ton of loving Christ early on. And I think there was also, because we didn't have a lot of money, that there was not really a connection to things, right? There was a lot of just outside and being with people that mattered. In fact, my dad ended up not even going to college. He was the first one on either side of our family to go, but he didn't go till there were three of us with a fourth on the way. And he was the first one then to go to college. And I think that had a big trajectory shift for us too, not necessarily because of college, but more because my dad has this uncanny ability to believe that he can do anything and that he can do it at any point in his life. And so I think the witness of that had a really profound effect on me.
Great. So Molly, how about for you? How would your childhood contrasted with that a little bit, or where were some similarities?
Yeah, it's definitely different in the sense of I did not grow up in a large, loud, affectionate Hispanic family. Rather, I grew up in a small town in Northwest Iowa, Spear Lake, Okoboji. We're pretty proud of our lakes up there, but very small town. And my mom grew up in a very religious and hardworking German Catholic farming community. Very holy, amazing people, incredible workers, but they were not very affectionate with each other. There wasn't a lot of talking about their faith, but it was certainly practiced. My dad also grew up Catholic, but again, it was more of just what they did. And so growing up, we went to Mass every week. We said prayers before meals. I have memories of my mom praying with me before bed, but there wasn't a lot of conversation necessarily directly about faith. But what I did learn, it was really the beginning of the school of virtue. I don't know, maybe aside from Jeremy, I don't know of anyone who is as hard of a worker as my mom. She really showed us what that meant. My dad too, but my mom was always a working mom. And somehow, I don't know how she did this, she would work long hours as a nurse and we would still have a home-cooked meal and fresh bread often. And she would clean the house on the weekends. And I recently asked her about that. And I said, how did you do that? And she smiled and she said, that's what I was taught. That's what you do. And she didn't have any resentment about it looking back. But it was the beginning of the school of virtue, definitely. And my dad, he had a huge emphasis on education and excellence. And recently I was actually talking to him about my early career in math. And apparently when I was in the sixth grade, my teacher saw a aptitude for math in me and wanted to bump me up to a higher level. And I was really nervous about it. And I had told my dad, I don't think I can do this. And he said, no, I believe in you. They see it. I see it. And if you struggle, I will help you. And so my parents and I don't have a perfect relationship. Obviously, I think every person would say, looking back, families are messy, right? There's hard, sure. There's good, but they definitely instilled that excellence and hard work in me.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. So Jeremy, as you started to progress towards young adulthood and think about your own education, was college on the horizon for you? Or what were your kind of thoughts during those teenage years of what you might end up doing with your life?
I think from both my parents' perspective, they did a fantastic job that college was going to happen. So we knew that. I always wanted to go to college. I wanted to do a lot of different things. I would be totally candid as a kid. I don't know that I hardly thought about college other than I knew I was going to go. I think my life was filled more with having a good time, playing soccer. And in fact, really, especially early years, I was just more having fun being with people. And I think my parents instilled that. I had a mom who is a saint, I would argue. And so, by the way, everyone in my family had Molly, because she's incredible. My mom is the most humble, kind, generous person that I've ever met in my life. And she's the one who really taught me to pray. So I think those formative years weren't about college. They were learning how to be a human being who loves the Lord. And my mom had a real big part in that. And I was really good at messing it up.
Yeah, what a gift that must have been. Did you have a sense at some point in your life, hey, we're here in a trailer park, my life is a little bit different than some of my peers? Was that ever a source of hardship for you, or how did you reconcile some of those feelings?
When my dad went back to college, he went to UMR, so Rolla. And when he went there, he was studying engineering. We were in a community that, again, didn't have hardly any money. It was both grandparents on both sides who put my dad through college. But we were in communities that were just alive. And so all my younger years were just rich. I had no idea that I didn't have money or that there was something different. I don't think it was probably till around third grade, when we moved to St. Louis, that I actually realized that some people had more money than that. And as teenage years, you compare yourself a lot and things like that. But up until we moved, honestly, I didn't know any different.
Yeah. Yeah. That's certainly a gift as well. And sometimes we get caught up in the comparisons, but I think some of the times that childlike simplicity can help us keep that in perspective. Molly, for you, what were some of the realizations and lessons of your childhood as you began to grow into young adulthood that made you understand some of the gifts of your family and also some of the challenges?
Yeah, that's a great question. I knew that my family went through some pretty difficult trials when I was in elementary school. And no, I'm not going to share that on here because that's their story. But
sure.
What it did show me is that families are messy. Families are not perfect, but we choose each other. And I remember very clearly a moment really noting, hey, my parents right now could easily say, we're done. We're going to end this marriage. And instead, they chose each other in some really hard circumstances. And by doing that, they chose me. They chose my sister. They gave us opportunities to flourish, to become who God meant us to be, right? Which those circumstances would have looked a lot different if they hadn't chose each other, even when it was messy and even when it was hard. Now, Dan, I can't say that in the middle of those teen years, I always respected that or had that perspective.
This is great.
I think that's the beauty of time, right? That's come, that appreciation of the work they did has also come with time.
Yeah, sometimes it is that perspective. I mean, even you talked about, gosh, looking back on all that your mom had given, and you probably understood that even more being a mom now. And sometimes just when we enter into some similar circumstances that our family, parents or grandparents or other people went through, you sort of marvel at, wow, the faith that was there or the consistency of love that was there. That time can certainly offer that perspective. So Molly, you came to Notre Dame right off the bat. What was that discernment like when you were thinking about coming to college and what eventually led you to Notre Dame?
Yes. So I knew from a young age that I was passionate about medicine and I wanted to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. And all through high school, I was very, very focused on that goal. And so as junior, senior year rolled around, I started looking at different programs that would provide a really great pre-med education for me. And so I was looking at various Catholic schools because at that point, I had always gone to public school because, again, small town, that's all that was there. But around my sophomore year in high school, I really began to fall in love with Jesus and with the church. And I did not have much formal training in catechesis. And so that was a desire of my heart. If I could, I wanted to be at a Catholic school, even though I looked at some other options as well. And so I was actually planning on going to St. Thomas, a small school in Minnesota with a large scholarship. And I just said, hey, mom and dad, here's Notre Dame. Phenomenal school. Will set me up probably with a fantastic education and it's Catholic. And they said, tell you what, if you get in, we'll take you there. If not, forget about it.
Yeah.
Because we had no family associated with Notre Dame. None of us had been there before. So when the day came, now this was back in the day when you got the big fat envelope.
Right.
Apparently they don't do anymore.
Yeah.
But I walked into the kitchen and my dad just had this massive smile on his face and he said, all right, you earned it. I'll take you there. And so really, we stepped onto campus. I can't even tell you, it wasn't even a pretty day. It was a cloudy March day. And yet there is just the majesty and the beauty of that place that it affects you, whether you are a believer or not. I don't know if anyone goes onto that campus and isn't affected, right? Mm-hmm. By just the sheer beauty of it. And so I fell in love with the campus and the programs and the culture and obviously the faith right away. And we got home and I was still unsure because I wasn't sure financially if it would work out.
Sure.
And so I was just praying, Lord, I know I'm not supposed to ask for a sign. Please give me a sign anyway so I can, you know, discern this. And I went, I just happened to go to the Notre Dame website later that day. And there it was. There was a picture that the campus photographer had taken of my parents and myself on our campus tour.
Huh.
Just on the backside of the basilica. And the subtitle, the title under the picture said, A Notre Dame Family.
Wow.
And I said, I just started crying and I showed my parents and I said, this is it. I want to go here.
Wow. That gives me chills just thinking about that. Don't always get as clear signs as that, do we?
No, not.
So, Jeremy, how about for you? What was your educational journey? Choosing an undergraduate and then eventually choosing to come to Notre Dame for your master's?
Well, I think the theme for me for most of my life has been the Lord loves to take me where I don't expect to go. So prior to being 16, we'll just say I made a lot of poor choices. And the Lord used that really to help me fall in love with Him. And at 16, a lot of those choices became public for my family. And so, yeah, the Lord just started working. I went on a retreat and I would say maybe for the first time I understood what it meant to follow Christ. And so I chose Him. And so I wanted to do ministry. And so I went to St. Louis University. I studied theology, philosophy, and music. Did my undergrad there, loved it, and then became a youth minister. Thought I would spend all of my rest of my life doing ministry. Mm-hmm. And it was great. I loved the work, loved the kids. And I was talking to seniors one day. Senior men, actually, and telling them, hey, you really should consider vocations to the priesthood and you need to give God first fruits. So you should consider it before anything else. And I was giving a very impassioned speech into which a senior raised his hand and said, Jeremy, I will pray about my vocation to the priesthood when you pray about yours.
Yeah.
And that wonderful senior called me out and I agreed. I said, okay, I'll pray. And he and I showed up every morning for the rest of his senior year. We went to mass in the chapel together and prayed. And at the end of that year, he went to college and I entered seminary.
Okay.
Which is actually a really key part of our story. So I had a friend who was at Notre Dame, and that friend had come home on a break and came home and shared that he cared about a girl who was there and asked me if I would pray for her while I was in seminary, which I agreed to pray for her by name. That woman was Molly. And so I prayed for Molly by name in the seminary while I was studying to be a priest a year before I met her, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I discerned out of the seminary. I had wonderful experience there. Loved it, but discerned that I was not called to be a priest and ended up applying to Notre Dame and got in and met Molly first week on campus. And yeah, so there, that's how we end up connecting.
Got it. And so I'm curious about that. Did you know that this was the Molly you were praying for? And did you casually bring that up? Like, oh yeah, I've been praying for you for the past however many months or years.
That's actually a more awkward part of the story. No, Molly did not know that I had prayed for her until after we were married. When I first met Molly, our friend is actually the one who introduced us. And later that year, he started dating someone. And so it opened the door and we were on sophomore road trip together. And so we were on retreat and the Lord just created space for us to talk and pray together. And that's kind of started the journey. I don't know if they do sophomore road trip anymore, but that was a retreat they used to do. And I was doing music and helping to lead.
Right. Great. So Molly, for you, what did you remember? What do you remember about meeting Jeremy? And when did it start to become a possibility? Like, maybe there's something more here than friendship.
Yeah. So I hope you don't mind. I need to back up a little bit.
Sure.
So I met Jeremy my sophomore year, but my freshman year really set the stage for me being even open to meeting Jeremy.
Yeah.
That's because, like I alluded to, I did not come in to Notre Dame with a well-catechized mind and heart. I knew I had experienced the love of Jesus, but I didn't know much about him or much about the church. And I definitely didn't think I agreed with many of the church's teachings, especially when it related to marriage and sexuality. And so really when I came into Notre Dame, I was very, very just focused, laser focused on getting into the best medical school there was. And I came in with a lot of wounds too, a lot of hurt in these areas. And I was in the folk choir. In fact, some of your past interviews have been with some of my really good friends from the folk choir. And I trusted them. And one night they said, hey, there's a guest talk by a man named Christopher West. He's going to talk about theology of the body.
Sure.
Come with. And so I said, okay, fine. I trust you. It sounds like a good break from calculus and chemistry, right? And I went, and this was really a crucial moment in my story with Jeremy as well, because hearing theology of the body for the first time that night, you know, Dan, it was as if I had all of these scattered puzzle pieces, but I didn't see how the whole picture fit together, right? And it isn't until that picture starts to fit together that you see the beauty revealed of the image that it is. And hearing theology of the body for me, it put together all of those beautiful pieces. Who is God? Who am I? What does it mean to be a gift? What is marriage? What is family? What is redeemed and beautiful sexuality mean? And I bought Christopher West's book. And the big joke in our family is that night was my only all-nighter in my time at Notre Dame. Because I stayed.
Couldn't put it down.
I was highlighting. I was reading. My mind just felt blown. And so that was a really important moment, because what it did is it really started that, allowed Christ to heal some really deep wounds in my life that I had toward marriage and relationships and sexuality in particular. And so then fast forward to where we left off with Jeremy. When I met him, I could see myself one day getting married. I certainly didn't think it would be while I was at Notre Dame, which is how our story then progresses. You know, but when I met him, there was this long-haired, lively Hispanic man who was in love with the Lord, intellectual seeker. He was curious. And yeah, it was just, it was a really exciting time.
Yeah, for sure. It's God is a God of surprises and how some of those things come about. And Molly, you talked about you came in with this very strong desire to be a doctor, get into the best medical school. Did that start to change over your time at Notre Dame? How did that develop?
Yeah. So it did start to change because as our relationship, Jeremy and my relationship began to grow, we began to ask different questions about, okay, well, if we see ourselves getting married, how do we want to balance work and family and being open to life? And we had to ask ourselves some really hard questions. And so when I finished my time at Notre Dame, I was still planning on a medical career. I wasn't sure if it was going to be medical school itself or maybe physician's assistant school, but we definitely had to ask ourselves a different set of hard questions. So what I came into my time at Notre Dame with that goal being foremost on my mind, I certainly left not less ambitious by any stretch of the imagination, but my goals had, I like to think, they got bigger. And it included more people.
For sure. And Jeremy, you alluded to this progression in your own discernment of going to college, youth ministry, seminary, discovering you weren't being called to that. This then discovering this call to married life and specifically to Molly, was that a surprise for you as that developed? Or can you take us through that, please?
Sure. So Molly is one of the most vivacious, delightful human beings I've ever met, Molly. And when we met and began to spend time together, you know how they talk about love just expands everything. And I felt like Molly, when you use the language, like it just, my goals got bigger. I felt like that's exactly what happened to you too. We began to enter into a very early love and like, what did that look like? And all that entails sacrifice and trying to figure out how two people's visions of the world and goals for their life, how do those blend together? And it became very beautiful. It was way faster, I think, than I would have expected. Well, I think for sure faster than you would have expected.
Definitely.
You know, we were, let's see, we started dating October 5th, and I think about
2003.
Yeah.
And we were engaged 6 months later.
Wow.
Yeah. So we didn't get married until fall break of her senior year.
So okay. October of 2005.
Yeah.
Oh, I think people will relate to this. We were married on the day of the USC Notre Dame game and the infamous Bush Push.
The Bush Push game.
Oh, I know. God bless our amazing friends who skipped the game to go to our wedding.
Now,
oh
wait
my
a minute.
Gosh.
Our amazing friends who skipped the game and made a lot of money on their
trip. Oh, right.
No, it was.
Yes.
That is true. All of that is true. I think, Dan, the part that was really beautiful is that you have no idea what the Lord has in store. Right? And for us, I think it was learning to just submit the plans that were somewhat different than our own, because God had a bigger plan, even if we couldn't see all of it. And so there was this, I mean, we were young too. Like anybody who's ever gotten married, you have no idea what you're getting into when you start.
Right.
But it's still, you can still say yes to even what you don't know. And I think that was really the beginning of a journey for us of how do we keep saying yes, Lord, to the little thing that's next, even though there's so much we don't know of what that means.
So Molly, that is a pretty unique experience to already be married during your time as an undergraduate. What was it like finishing your time out at Notre Dame as a married person? And then what was next for you as you continue to figure out where God was calling you as a family?
Yeah, so actually the transition was pretty smooth. It certainly was different than most because I took midterms and then hopped in a car and got married on a Saturday, right? And then had fall break and returned as a married woman with my husband. And so quite frankly, I mean, all of my professors were very supportive, my friends obviously knew Jeremy, loved him. Many, like I said, were at the wedding. And so it felt like a very easy transition. Now, I did graduate a semester early. And so that was different as well. So I wasn't on campus very long before I graduated. But shortly after, we had, once again, a lot of decisions and discernment of, is it medical school? I was an anthropology major, as well as taking all of those pre-med classes. And so both Jeremy and I had a desire to travel and learn Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, God had a different plan. And it was about 3 months after we were married, we found out we were pregnant. And not just pregnant with one, but pregnant with two.
Oh my goodness. Dive into the deep end right off the bat.
Praise God.
It was. And that I also felt like was just really a clear path, because we were trying to figure out medical school and how to make it work. But with two babies and a high risk pregnancy that develops pretty quickly, the door was shut for that season. Mm. And I had to really grapple with, what is my new identity?
Mm-hmm.
Because I never, until sort of those moments that I mentioned in college of having some healing with regarding some past wounds, I never imagined that for my life. And so here I was, and begging the Lord, Lord, I know I'm yours. These babies are yours. Help me embrace this, because it's hard. Going from an academic environment that's highly stimulating, there's a lot of affirmation, to suddenly being on bed rest for an extended period of time in a city that I didn't know well, without friends and community, and in a new marriage. It was just a stripping away of a lot of the comforts that I had. And it was a really challenging time for us as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jeremy, for you, here you are, a new husband. Church asked us to be open to life and marriage, and yet you're dealt with a pretty complex situation here of your wife on bed rest with twins. You're trying to, I imagine, you had finding some work and being able to support your wife and family. What were those days from your perspective?
So I did get a job. The job was in Kansas City. And we had moved. We were still planning to go to language school, like Molly had said, and go live in Guatemala for a period of time. And when she got pregnant with twins, it's funny. It's honestly like being back at when I was young. We had no money because I was a youth minister. So honestly, I don't know that there was a lot of processing more than there was just living day by day, because, I mean, it was the bed rest. The kids were born at 31 weeks. So that meant a NICU stay with, you know, when they were born, they were 3'10 and 3'75. So itty bitty little dudes. And so you're in your 20s in a new city, like Molly said, without a lot of community. And yet the church rallied around us, and meals and support. And I mean, people came out of the woodwork. But there's a dying to self, and maybe a little bit of dreams and ideas as all those happen, as new ones are born. And this marriage is where the new life was being born, but we still had to wrestle with it, right? You had to choose it, and you had to choose the life that God was bringing in. And so for me, it wasn't a really like reflective time. It was very much a, how do I help? How do I serve? How do I love my family and my wife? And how do we take care of all this with very little money?
Yeah. Yeah. I have this image of calling the disciples and letting go of those nets and thinking, well, this was how my life was going to go, and yet I'm letting go of some of those things. And this is how, this is how the Lord is calling me. So Molly, for you, as you started to understand more of what your life and vocation looked like, how did that develop with letting go of some of those things that you thought you were going to do and developing into what God was calling you to do?
Yeah, early on, I really look to St. Gianna, right?
Mm-hmm.
A saint, a mother, a doctor. And I really expected that's how my life is going to be, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So when all of a sudden this shift happened where, okay, well, my life isn't going to look like that. What is it going to look like? There was a stripping away right? And anytime there's a stripping away of what we hold as who we are, as our identity, it's painful, right? Mm-hmm. And so there was some really challenging times. I mean, some actual depression that mm-hmm. happened in those early years as I really grappled with who am I? What is my identity? And now looking back on that, I was a perfectionist. I thrived in production, in putting together, cranking out the papers and the presentations, studying for the tests. And suddenly to have that stripped away, it was a challenge. But what I found was an incredible richness of other women in this community that said, hey, we can be saints in this process of being moms as well. That this work, this hidden work, it matters. I am a firm believer that stay-at-home moms are also working mom. Mm-hmm. And to add to the mix, I'm a homeschooling mama as well now, which is a different story altogether. But also just pouring into the lives of the saints. I remember reading a lot of the lives of the saints early on about what does it mean to, like Jeremy said, die to self? What does it mean to be a gift to my spouse and to my children and to create a home that nurtures these souls?
Yeah, it's such a sacred calling and one, as you said, that is hidden. We only see the fruits of it sometimes as the children grow up and discover their own vocations. Jeremy, for you, what was kind of the progression in your work and career as you were starting to support this growing family and support this idea of Molly being a stay-at-home mom?
My career path is probably not the norm. So I really believed that I was going to stay in ministry and that Molly and I both had kind of just accepted that the poverty that came with that was a gift, right? Mm-hmm. That it detached you from things. So I was in Kansas City for a couple years and got the opportunity to go in and coach varsity soccer for one of the high schools. And they actually, I think it was a con job. They invited me to come coach soccer and they said I needed to interview. And then when I went in and interviewed, it wasn't an interview for a soccer job. It was an interview for a teaching job, which is great. It was actually very well planned. I think it's a wonderful sales process. They did a great job. And short story, like as we entered into that, I ended up saying yes to it, not because it was what I wanted to do. I actually didn't want to be in a classroom. But as Molly and I prayed, the Lord wouldn't let our heart go. And so I said yes to what I didn't want to do and found out it was exactly what I wanted to do. And it's funny, when we say yes to the Lord, I think he does that a lot. I found out that I had more time with the kids and I was actually able to enter into deeper relationships in this incredible school called St. James Academy in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And so really had a beautiful 7 years of teaching. During that time, we had three more kids and lots more struggle during that. And I'll let Molly talk more about that piece. But the other thing is we were just making it barely financially. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of having to humble yourself as people stepped in to help us. And we had, like I said, we had an incredible community and people who were just doing amazing things. And I loved my work. But there was a moment back in 2011 where I had come home to St. Louis and we were sitting around with my dad and my brother, and there was a maternity home that had gotten taken advantage of by a vendor. And that experience kind of fostered my dad, my brother, and I starting a company. And so I thought that was actually going to be, as that company grew and I jumped in with them, I thought that was going to be the shift out of ministry. Mm-hmm. But God had a whole different plan. So it actually started a season of entrepreneurship and a whole different trajectory for me, which we can get to, because I think there's so much in the middle here that probably is more for you to tell about how our family was growing and what was happening and how the homeschooling began and stuff in there. But career-wise, my first vocation has always been our family. Mm-hmm. And so even the move out of teaching wasn't one of desire. It had been one of, we're making it month to month. If I can go do something, work has dignity, I need to take care of my family differently. And I think that was a big part of the impetus to make a change there.
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll definitely get into that. Molly, to come back to you, of course, children are a blessing. We always believe that. But, you know, I've found even my wife and family, sometimes when you're in the midst of those early years of little kids and sometimes postpartum depression or just the emotional swing with all the hormones and such. That can be, those can be super challenging years. So was that your experience as you not only grew from 2 to 5 children, but also took on this vocation of homeschooling?
Yeah, absolutely. The sheer act of being pregnant was very hard for me. Mm-hmm. Out of our 5 kids, 4 of them were premature. And so all the pregnancies were just were very challenging. The postpartum time, I had depression on all but one, which obviously is just, it's a heavy cross. And when, after we had our 3rd, our sweet daughter, I started to have some new symptoms. I started to have migraines for the first time in my life and debilitating migraines. And I started to have vertigo, and I had never had any of these symptoms before, and they came on fast and they came on furious, and it progressed to muscle weakness and incredible fatigue. And it got to the point where I was wheelchair bound and we were in a split level house, just a small little house. And so you can imagine someone who can't walk with 3 little kids and 2 sets of stairs. Right. As it was an incredible challenge, very, very hard time, hard season in life. And so when we found out we were pregnant with our son, John Paul, my health was quite poor. And what we later found out many years later was that I actually had chronic Lyme disease. And so we didn't know it at the time. It took quite a long time, many, many doctors later, to find this out. But basically what that meant was there were times when I couldn't walk. There were times when the depression was so bad, I didn't know how I was going to get out of bed. There were times when the entire room was just spinning around me and I would be sick. And those years, looking back on it, they humble me, because somehow God provided. The kids are, you know, they're not grown up yet, but they are much bigger. Our twins are now 17, almost 18, and they don't recall how sick mom was, right? And so, and I'm really grateful for that, because it was a really challenging time of just clinging to our faith, clinging to the beliefs that God was with us and that he would redeem and restore this, and that this side of heaven isn't perfect yet, and that these struggles could be redemptive.
I think there's something else too there, Dan. Like, as Molly and I were going through all of that, right? And we were going through it together, and
for sure,
the struggles are different, right? So I'm having to helplessly watch as my wife is having all of this, and yet we've got all of these little kids. And so there's actually beautiful parts of that. Like, I remember when Molly couldn't walk one time, and I'm supposed to be going to school, and Molly is still trying to homeschool. And it was uncanny, because she had these 3 little kids, and she had a walkie talkie, and she would say, okay, it's time for school. And they would all grab their stuff and they would just bring it in on her bed. And that's where they would learn, because mom couldn't get out of bed. And then I would leave feeling guilty, because I had to work, because we needed the money for school, but I felt like I should be at the home. But all of that, all of those crosses and hardship actually, I think, forged in us just a deep desire and like to pour into others, because we were being poured into so much with community, and we were pouring into each other. And like, so there was this, I don't know, I felt like the suffering was a massive gift that formed in us just a spirit of, okay, Lord, we know you have this. We know it's hard, but there's also beauty and joy and laughter in it too, in the middle of the cross.
Wow. That's a remarkable perspective to have during such a difficult time. Molly, the decision to homeschool during that time, but then as things started to improve, what was behind that call towards homeschooling, and how did that develop as you discovered some things about your health, and it sounds like things got better?
Yeah, they did. Thanks be to God. Yeah, so eventually once I reached a diagnosis, I was able to get some phenomenal doctors and really get help to a point where I was stable and I healthy enough to take on this monumental task of homeschooling. I have to tell you that it's funny because I had said earlier in my life, the one thing I would never do was teach.
Yeah.
And right here, God, I felt like was calling me into this, but it was I was reluctant, right? I did not understand it. It was Jeremy who actually early on said, hey, I think homeschooling is a really viable, beautiful option for Catholic school. Mm-hmm. And part of it started as a financial decision. We didn't have a lot of money. And so the prospect of putting twins in preschool was a financial burden. And so it started there. It started with, okay, I'm healthy enough to take this on. Let's try preschool. And then they're definitely going to kindergarten, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the next year came and I loved it. I loved that time with them. And mm-hmm. I loved the fact that I got the best of them and I got the worst, right? I mean, total messiness, right? But that's the beauty. That's the journey. And as we went on and my health had its ebbs and flows, I definitely mm-hmm. will have a lifelong struggle with some of the ramifications of chronic Lyme disease. But what we saw was just, and it was always on us, what we saw, what Jeremy and I saw was mm-hmm. this beautiful opportunity to educate in a way that really respected their dignity. And don't get me wrong, there are amazing schools, amazing teachers out there, but it was a unique opportunity to disciple our children. And what I have found, I've now been homeschooling for 13 years. Mm-hmm. Our oldest are going to be seniors next year, and we still homeschool all the way through.
Yeah.
So far, at least. And what I have found in this journey is that, one, I love to learn. And so, right, even going back to those mm-hmm. early days at Notre Dame, I just was passionate about learning. And that place did help give me so many tools that I have used and I use every day with my kids. But being enveloped in beautiful, good, true stories, being able to invoke wonder in my kids, because wonder, one of the things we say in our home is wonder leads to worship. Because once mm-hmm. you have the posture of wonder, you have to realize that there is something so much bigger than you are. And so being able to walk with them in that has been a gift, but also being able to journey with them in my imperfection and in their imperfection has really just given us the opportunity to say, okay, family is, like we've said, family is messy. So what does it mean to live out this universal call to holiness, even within homeschooling or in the context of family? Well, we have a maxim that we borrowed from St. Teresa of Avila, who's the patron saint of our marriage, because we were married on our feast day. And
mm-hmm.
she was known to say to her sisters, begin again. When you fall, when you hurt someone, you say you're sorry and you begin again. And that has really developed because of this journey that we've been on together. Right? Because we spend a lot of time together. So you got the long answer, Dan, to that question.
Oh, that's great. Oh, I'm just sitting here taking it in and so happy to share that with our audience. I mean, I do think it is somewhat of a unique perspective to take on that vocation of homeschooling, although you've seen it grow, I think, in popularity, especially within Catholic families over the years. But just to give a perspective into what some of the crosses are about that, but also the beauty, I think, is really helpful. So, Jeremy, this move to St. Louis, this season of entrepreneurship, starting this company, tell us more about that and how that factors into your life today.
Well, I think that still actually ties back into the family stuff, right? Because part of our discernment of where God was calling us was shaped by what it was like to teach. So, hear me clearly, I loved teaching, absolutely mm-hmm. loved it. But the structure of the schedule for teaching is actually kind of brutal, right? Yeah. It's very rigid. There's no space for a wife who's suffering if I needed to get out. They were great and they worked with me, but it was still really hard. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to have more time presence to the kids. And in order to make ends meet, I needed to coach multiple seasons. And so my nights went long too. And so all of that, when we switched roles, really was a family decision as much as was a decision to lean into something we felt like God was calling us to. We felt like the call was coming a lot through the family. So I got this really beautiful moment to begin to build a for-profit company, but that it was on mission. So it was called Mission Matters Group. Our work was to leverage strategy and technology at the service of mission. We served nonprofits. And little did I know that that work wasn't actually anything to do with technology or consulting that I was going to do for the rest of my life. It was actually more about understanding what it meant to journey with people who were vulnerable and hurting. So our clients became pregnancy centers. They became adoption, foster care, homelessness, human sex trafficking, like all these different groups who were serving vulnerable populations. And we were building technology to support their missions, which meant I had to understand their programs, how they cared for people, what they measured, how they looked at success. And very rapidly, we went from just building technology to saying, wait a minute, we're getting to see all these models. Have you ever thought about trying this? What if we did this? And it became a lot more strategic and organizational consulting. And so that I spent the next really 8 years doing, and God used it to say, look, you've been on evangelization, but now look what it's like to walk with people and evangelize through the way you live your life. And it was just a totally different shift. I got to work from home. So the time with the family dramatically jumped and allowed me to be able to really just lean in. Because again, our primary vocation, even though I love my work and I've always loved everything I've done, my primary place that I'm most passionate about is with Molly and my marriage and then how we love these kids. And so being able to work remotely and work from home before that was a thing was amazing. And then to lean in and really in about, I guess this was 2017, I got the opportunity to be part of developing the first telehealth implementation for a pregnancy center, which was incredible and loved the work. Spent 2 years helping them bring that across their entire national network. And then they asked if I would join as part of the executive team. So I leaned in over there and got to actually be on as a kind of a vice president over working with them. It was a national network of pregnancy centers, which was a really beautiful work, eye-opening. And there was something that really struck me at the time. We were looking at all of these women who had chosen life, right? Which is a beautiful thing.
Sure.
And we began to ask the question, what happens to them 18 months later?
Yeah.
Has their life changed? Has it transformed? Are they in the same spot? Do they have the same struggles? And as we started to study, what we realized is that there is a percentage that when they came through, they chose life, but 18 months later, nothing had changed. They were pregnant again and they were struggling again. Mm-hmm. And that really struck a chord with me. And like, it's not just that one issue, it's every issue. Like, are we actually making transformational change as Christians? Can we, we're leaning in such a way that the things that we do aren't just band-aids. They are just something good in a moment, but they're actually walking long-term and changing communities. Mm-hmm. And so that work became like the impetus for what I do now. Back in 2020, in the middle of a pandemic, great time to found a nonprofit. Anybody listening, you should try it. We decided to found Life on Belay, which is what I do now. And our mission is to make paths from brokenness to the Father's love. The way we do that is actually the part that might be a little more nerdy. We basically do consulting. We lean in three ways. We lean in with nonprofits on the front lines, and we help them build capacity to love people more, to have better interventions. And it looks very technical, right? It's around organizational management. It's around measurement, and it's around marketing and branding, all sorts of stuff. But it's really fun. Like, we get to go in and pour into groups who normally are underserved. And then secondly, we work then to get all of them connected in a community, right? So collaborating together to make pathways from those moments of intervention to moments of connectedness. So bringing resource providers together, getting the churches involved, and making a really clear journey for someone who's in brokenness to then walk into what it looks like to be loved deeply by others and by our Lord. And then the last thing we do is we work in churches and we help mobilize the church to be the home, right, where people find that stable community and train the church on how to walk with people who've been broken. So it's those three things together really are our mission. And that's what I've gotten to lean in and do since 2020. And it's been awesome. But again, to caveat, all of that pales in comparison, I think, to the work that we've been doing in the family.
Mm-hmm.
There's one piece that I think is really important in that, which is I believe our Lord used all of the training I've gotten over the years on how to lead teams and how to help coach people and how to really work with organizations to get them to accelerate. And all of those things in business, they're human things. They're virtues. And so all I was doing was teaching virtue in a business setting, but it began to teach me of like, what are the things we need to do in, as a family to actually help the family to thrive and what virtues need to exist. And so Molly and I, as the executive team of the family, really have been trying to lean in to say, how do we love our kids well in the midst of our own mess? And it's just been this beautiful journey.
So Molly, just in response to that, I'm curious to know, as Jeremy was going through some of these work transitions and figuring out the kind of these progressions that God was calling him to, what was going on for you during that time? And what was that like to see Jeremy take some of these big leaps of faith professionally that certainly also affected your family?
Yeah, I have throughout this whole journey, we have just watched God provide over and over and over again. He says in scripture, cast into the deep, throw your nets out and trust. And I feel like it has just been, I've really been convicted that this posture of trust and surrender, it's the key, right? Whether you are a CEO in a top company or in a hidden position like mine, we all have to have this posture of trust. And it's been exciting to watch what the Lord is doing through Jeremy and through Life on Belay, but to see that translate also into our family in conversations, hard conversations, right? We have a house full of teenagers.
Right.
Every day is a hard conversation, right?
Yeah.
And to lean in and not be afraid to ask good questions, to grow in virtue together, to know that just because there's conflict, that somehow that's bad or our family is failing, but that's refining us. And that's been a beautiful journey to be on together as we walk this path, both for myself in the homeschooling realm, both for myself just as a wife and as a daughter of God, and watching Jeremy in his job as well.
Well, thank you for giving us that perspective. I do want to turn to holiness. We've talked about a couple of the saints so far, but as you think about your vocations to marriage, to parenthood, some of the things you're doing both in homeschooling with Life on Belay as that has progressed, who have been some of the models of holiness that you both have held on to that have given you hope even maybe during some difficult times?
A fantastic question. I think I shared at the very beginning that my mom is a living saint. And my mom, I can be very practical in it because there are some things to this day that have shaped me deeply. One is my mother is the best listener of anybody I know. She will never talk over you. She waits and she asks these probing questions to know more. And she's so patient. Even if you're not willing to share or if you're grumpy or angry or whatever it is, I think she is a model of what it means to be an incredible spouse. And so as Molly and I have walked all of this, one of the encouragements that and models of holiness is that our vocation, our primary vocation, isn't the kids. It's actually each other. In learning to pour into each other first and to listen and to keep working when it's hard and working when you mess up and learning to apologize. All of those things I learned from my mom. And she's still way better at it. She's incredible. But Molly and I have been trying to practice it and lean in. So I would think that's one for sure.
Yeah, I think for me, my mind goes Well, it goes back to my mom, who certainly lived out heroic virtue. And that was certainly a model for holiness for me, but also to the saints. I have such a deep affection for John Paul II. I am naturally an anxious person, and be not afraid, right? Just to hear that over and over again. And obviously, he's really quoting scripture, right?
Right.
And, but just his holy example, and also just so many of the female saints, Saint Therese, I mentioned Saint Teresa of Avila, just seeing that God created us male and female, so complementary, right? And just being inspired that I do have this feminine genius, right? Even in this hidden vocation. And that's just been really impactful for me. I'm also really blessed to have an incredible spiritual director.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he has shown me is how to listen as well, right? I think there's a theme here. I can definitely be very didactic. I want to drill in the right lesson at the right time and teach my kids a lesson, right? And he has really shown me the posture of the Christ who asks more questions than he answers and accompanies people in tenderness and gentleness. And so I would say him as well.
Dan, can I give one more example?
Please.
So one of the models for holiness in my life is my wife. I have never seen anyone, truly anyone, who the Lord has called to do something that is so different than what they had pictured.
Mm-hmm.
And Molly does it with this incredible grace and rigor and hiddenness all at the same time. And in no way perfect, right? That's not what a saint is. But like, she does it in a way that is tender, that is almost like the begin again piece, right? It's Teresa of Avila. It's like, oh, this is so hard, Lord. Okay, here I go. But I think what I have learned so much, I continue to learn from Molly, and is that she has a tenacity to keep going. And for anyone who has never been in the homeschooling space, I don't believe there is a job harder in the world, because you are mom and dad and your teacher, and there isn't a break. And yet that's actually the gift of it. That in the being in it all the time, you're dealing with the beauty and the messy. And Molly does that with an immense amount of grace. And the way as she's done that year over year, and she's chosen it again and again, man, I am just so inspired all of the time by her. And I think that's what you actually in marriage want. You want to be able to see the beauty of your spouse and be inspired and called to holiness. And so like, I'm just so grateful to God for giving her to me.
That's beautiful. Yeah. We're called to sanctity. And I think in marriage, in the best sense, we're called to help each other towards heaven and towards holiness. So as a last question for both of you, what have been some of the practical things that you've discovered in marriage that have helped you in that pursuit of holiness, both individually and then together as a married couple?
One of the things that we try to do every week, and things go much smoother when we do, is that we check in with each other on how our prayer life is, how physically we're feeling, our emotions, how we feel about the other person, how we're doing with the kids, work, so on. You get the picture. But what that has done is it's also really provided just an opportunity to be vulnerable and honest with each other, not in an aggressive way, but just when we're vulnerable, right? Vulnerability leads to intimacy, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's been one practical thing that we have done that has been really helpful for us.
Yeah. I would add several things. I think that over the years, we have gotten more and more structured because certain things matter so much. Praying together every single day and making sure it's intentional and praying for each other every quarter. At least sometimes we mess up. We're a little late on that, but we actually spend half a day together and looking back over what went well and asking where we want to go. And then we actually do, it's going to sound a little nerdy, but we create this poster that's basically our family plan for the quarter. It's got our goals. We then talk about it with the kids and we lean in and it's visual in our home. Wow. And so like that rhythm of every 90 days asking, are we on the direction that God is calling us to be? What do we need to do most importantly as a family? And then making it visual and constant that we can see it has been really beautiful. And, you know, even Molly was able to rattle off those things in the check-in because we actually structured it and we created a rule for our marriage. And all those components are in that rule. And so it gives us a framework to talk about, like, what are the things that we need to be talking about rather than just it being random. So I think the discipline in personal prayer, our prayer together, and then really just working at vision for our family have been really great virtues and gifts.
Well, that is certainly inspiring. And I think something for people to strive for. It may not look exactly the same for every marriage and every family, but I think what I'm hearing you both talk about is that openness to listen to God's voice in your life and then to take action when you have heard that voice of God, to not be afraid about what that might mean. So thank you for coming on today and for sharing that story with us. I think a lot of people will connect with these aspects of your story, and I've certainly been inspired by it as well. So thank you both, Molly and Jeremy, for taking the time to talk with me today.
Thanks so much, Dan. We had a great time.
Yeah, God bless.
God bless you as well. Well, that concludes this episode of Everyday Holiness. As always, we invite you to subscribe to the podcast, to share it with others who might be inspired by those stories, and also to sign up for our Faith Indy Daily Gospel Reflection at faith.indy.edu/signup. There you'll receive our daily gospel reflection as well as notification of future episodes of the podcast. Thank you for joining us, and until next time, you'll be in our prayers. God bless.